Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
I'm gonna make a beat with my mouth, yo. Yeah, did you get that, Gavin? And stare making beats? You can edit that all into a great hip-hop beat. What, Gavin?
I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we're one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On this week's episode, we're going to look into the local craft fair, Craft Lake City, find out about the cycling event Tour de Bruta, and Free Comic Book Day. Craft Lake City is Utah's largest DIY arts festival, and it happens every year at the Gallivan Center in downtown Salt Lake City. It was founded in 2009 by Slug Magazine, and the event has grown in size and attendance every year since its inception, with over 21,000 visitors over the past 3 years. Last year, the festival had over 200 artists with 20 bands on different stages. Here to join us is Michelle Stark, Craft Lake City's exhibition manager. Thank you for joining us, Michelle.
Thanks for having me.
How's the festival going to be different this year from last year?
We have a few changes. It's going to be a little bit longer. We're going to have it start at noon this year instead of 2 o'clock. Hopefully that gives artists a little bit longer to peddle their ware and also patrons a good opportunity to see more craft, art, it's science.
Science, really?
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that. There's a DIY engineering category. Explain that for me if you don't mind.
Well, my take on it is I think that it's just expanding on the idea of creating and being creative. So I think that it's taking the do-it-yourself movement and it's putting a little bit of a technology and science spin on it. Some of the things that people might relate to in that category are robotics, or I don't know if who's seen Robot Wars. I think that show is absolutely rad, but 3D printers, LED type projects, interactive games, anything that's a little bit more technology and science based is what we're kind of encouraging. In my opinion, that's just taking creativity and do-it-yourself philosophy and just making it broad.
Which is really great. It's going to be amazing, yeah. Incorporating a whole different kind of artist. And you mentioned the reach of Craft Lake City. What is the role of the organization in the community?
I think as any kind of art organization, we're trying to teach art and make art available or craft available or, again, science available to the entire community. All of us want people to appreciate not just the arts and not just science, but also that there are people in our community that have a lot to offer as far as what they're doing in their own homes. I think people are coming up with amazingly creative ideas, and this just offers them a venue to share it. I think one thing that we do that is not like other fairs or other festivals is we are absolutely local. We keep it 100% local. I'm jazzed about that. I love being a participant in that.
You mentioned the broad reach of crafting and people crafting in their homes. I interviewed an artist last year about her crafting. She lived in Davis County and she uses recycled tires to make a lot of her bags and coats and stuff, bike inner tubes, and I thought that was really awesome. That's what you're talking about, right? Like you, and she made all that stuff at home.
I love that we have a category for people who kind of reuse items or are interested in recycling items to make new inventive items. I think that is definitely one of the most interesting categories that we have at Craft Lake City, and which I think we'll maybe see more of with the new science category. I'm interested to see how people come up with sustainable and green ideas. I think that we need to encourage that.
That's kind of about the philosophy of crafting in general, getting away from mainstream manufactured products and tapping into the element of people's personal creativity. And in that regard, what kind of art and artists does Craft Lake City foster?
Again, I think local. You know, I've always thought of Craft Lake City as the types of crafters and artists that are taking an old problem and solving it in a new way. Those are the people that I'm most interested in. And that, you know, when I see their art, I'm like, wow, you took a belt buckle and you made it a chalkboard. Or you took a common day item and you just reinvented it. Or you're using knitting or crocheting and you're making something spectacular out of it that we haven't seen before. So I really appreciate that those seem to be the types of people who apply for Craft Lake City and who continue to just push their craft forward and make it more interesting and kind of modernize it.
The chalk billboard belt buckle person, the artist you mentioned, who's that?
Leo Bowman.
That kind of artist and the art they represent is used as an example on your application page, actually, at craftlakecity.org. I thought that was really, really cool. It's a really great concept. It's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, take an old idea and reinvent it.
Yeah, speaking of that application page, people can go to that. The application process opened on March 5th. And tell us what one needs to apply.
You can find the link on any of our social networking places, Facebook, Twitter, and we do it all. We do all of the social networking sites, but also you can go to www.craftlakecity.com and you can find a link there to apply. And applications, you are going to be able to apply for Craft Lake City up until May 7th.
That's great. And what are some of your favorite parts of Craft Lake City that are coming back this year that you're looking forward to?
Man, it's just fun, and I am so inspired by people's ideas, and I am so inspired by artists and crafters, and I'm really excited to meet some of these more, you know, like science and technology type folks, because I think I get really encouraged by inventiveness and the way that people think. And I also love that we can offer these ideas to the entire community, as well as not, I mean, I kind of deal, you know, my job at Craft Lake City is really to focus on the artists and help them out and answer any of their questions and advocate for them, just get them situated. But I really love the live music. And this year, I think we're gonna have like more food types of vendors and maybe some food trucks. We can look forward to some really cool new options for food, and it's lively. I love it. I love Craft Lake City, and I think that we offer something to the community that other events do not.
Well, I'm looking forward to another really great year. Thank you for joining us, Michelle. Thank you for that information.
Hi.
For more information on Craft Lake City and to participate in the event, visit craftlakecity.com. Lady and Gent is an Americana band from Provo, Utah. They formed in April of 2011 with Garrett Williams on banjo and piano, Ben Williams on guitar, Caleb Loveless on bass, and Dana Sorensen on vocals with the rest of the band. They won Velour's Summer 2011 Battle of the Bands competition, beating 19 other rivals in a jury audience vote. Last week, the band released their debut album, To Death in Delta. From that, here's their song, Hope to Hold.
Yeah. please come visit soon. In a picture frame, a memory of this room. Death now holds you like I want to alive. I hope to keep you in my mind. Death now holds you like I want to alive. I hope to keep you in my mind.
That was Lady and Gent with Hope to Hold from their debut album, To Death in Delta. To get updates on the band and more info in general, visit them online at facebook.com/ladyandgent or ladyandgentmusic.com. The Tour de Brutas is an annual charity bicycle ride that brings together cyclists and breweries to raise money for Utah charities. It takes riders and waves to several local breweries, including Red Rock, Uinta, Squatters, Desert Edge, and Bohemian. This year's event will go to benefit the Children's Justice Center, Intermountain Therapy Animals, and the Utah Pride Center. Here's Tour de Brutas' Zach Bale to explain a little bit more about what's going on. Thanks for joining us, Zach.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, welcome to be here. Thank you for having me.
Where did the idea come from for breweries and cycling to merge?
Sure. So a couple things. So my friend Tim and I, so really Tim Stemple was the kind of the birth of the idea. And we both like beer and like bikes and have visited many other cities. It's something that's common kind of in the Pacific Northwest, Portland and Seattle, and then even Colorado and area. So we thought, I think, really just to bring that to Salt Lake City, that we like bikes, we like beer, and I think other people do too.
And what is the ultimate goal of the Tour de Brutas?
Yeah, so I think the thing that's a little bit more unique is really just doing good. So we really have the main premise of we're raising money for charity and doing it in a fun way that a lot of people appreciate. And really it started out kind of just a group of friends where we said, hey, who do we like? Who do we support? And we kind of draw straws and threw names into a hat and pick some out, and as it started.
How did you originally choose the charities? Was it that simple? You put some charities' names in a hat and drew them out?
Yeah. A handful of us, our background is nonprofits. We worked at a couple different ones. So we kind of started with our own and the thought of who else do we network with and connect with. But it was really each of us brought a nonprofit to the table, and really consensus. We said, you know, who might need the money the most? And I think often what we do is we try to support smaller nonprofits that really kind of our amount of donation will really make quite a bit of a difference.
And you've got a really diverse group of charities there. That's cool that you can service all different kinds and everyone's involved. I think that's great.
Yeah. One thing we kind of thought about in a way is one thing, kind of riding bikes in the environment is really important for us. So always having some sort of kind of environmental charity. This year, kind of Intermountain Therapy Animals. And then also kind of a human aspect was important for us. And then kind of others mixed in along the way.
You mentioned the eco-friendliness of your riders and people that participate. Can you explain the relationship that you have with the Live Green Festival, which is the launching point of the race or the cycle event?
Yeah, for sure. So in year one, when we were thinking about it and kind of thinking of a place to meet, we went to a lot of the Bicycle Month meetings, and Live Green had gone as well, and we just started kind of talking and saying, hey, what about this? You know, kind of a mutually beneficial collaboration. We might bring some people to the festival, and many of the people that may want to ride the ride are already there. And kind of hatched the plan from there and have been in touch since.
Will you explain the wave and route process to people that may not understand that? I saw that on the website and I don't think I get it, but how do you guys have it organized, the physical route?
Sure, yeah. So one of the things that we've really had to problem solve around is capacity. There's been tons of interest. Every year we've done it, we've sold out, and we would love to even have more slots open than we have available. Really what it comes down to is the capacity of each location. So first year we had one group, primarily kind of this critical mass that went from brewery to brewery, and it was great. And then the year after that, we wanted to make the opportunity available to more people. So what we really ultimately had to do is divide up the groups. So this year we're doing kind of a wave system where one group will take off an hour before the next, and two groups take off at each hour going opposite directions, basically, through the breweries.
And you all ultimately end up at Piper Down.
Exactly, yeah. So the other thing that we really wanted is to kind of have this after party gathering of everyone and really to create kind of a cultural experience. It's not just go on the ride, but a lot of it is about being on the ride with other people, having lots of bikes, and also ending and meeting the people and making friends along the way. That was something that was important to us. So again, we thought about where could we host a great after party, and had made some connections with Piper Down, and I think it's gonna be great.
I agree, that's a really good landing spot, and it's big enough for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Registration is closed now, you mentioned that, but you guys are still looking for volunteers. Where should people apply for those positions to get more information?
Yes, so we have information on our website, and I believe it's www.tourdebruta.org. There's links there, and then what we can do as well, if they email any one of us, our contact information is on there, we can send them volunteer information. We're using kind of an online sign up for different time slots.
And can you remember a moment on a ride recently, last year, maybe the year before, where it just seemed to come together? Did you ever have a moment where you're like, this is amazing?
The first year was that. I think, so a handful of us got together and thought, who knows if this is gonna happen or we're gonna pull it off. And registration was kind of the first year, we were nervous, and it was just tons of people, tons of bikes. It was amazing, it was excellent. And we thought, wow, how's this gonna go? And probably about brewery number two in, it was just this great mass of people and everyone was having fun, the breweries were having fun. And we thought, this is amazing, this is great. And we ended the day and everyone had fun, no one got hurt. We made some money for charities. It was great.
Speaking of people getting hurt, this is, to some people, the idea of drinking and cycling or whatever sounds dangerous. But in terms of safety, what do you recommend to the riders involved and cyclists dealing with street riding in general?
Sure. So I think it's kind of a couple different parts. I think it was a topic we thought of when we came up with the ideas, beers and bicycles. So that was one thing that all throughout we have a lot of serious conversations about, really quantity. I mean, it's to go and enjoy the breweries. It's not really around drinking and drinking a lot, but riding your bike and being outside. And so kind of the first piece in the beginning of the registration, we have signs up and we talk about just general rules of the road. And that's something that's necessary and important for anyone on the ride. You need a helmet. You have to participate and follow the laws, or you can't participate in the tour. It's kind of one of our things. And then the other thing that you'll see is really the timing of the ride and the quantity of breweries we stop at really allows people to both go and taste and enjoy beer, but not drink so much that it's unsafe. And so it's really just around kind of having a fun, casual day.
As we mentioned, this year's ride is sold out and you can volunteer at the website. Is that a great feeling though, knowing that there's so many people involved that it sells out?
It's good, quick. Mixed feelings. I think we would love to have far more slots available. I think it has been so much interest and it's been great. So it's something we're thinking a lot about. So mixed feelings. I think we'd love to have more people to participate, and it's been such a great honor that it's worked and that there's so many people welcomed and interested in coming down.
That is great. Anything else you'd like to add about the ride that we didn't cover?
Well, I think we appreciate it. I think our hope is really to combine things that we love, and we got together and, you know, bikes and community and giving back to the community, and I guess just a general thanks to everyone that both have come out and ridden and others that give us support. We have quite a few sponsors, and thanks to the breweries as well.
Well, thanks for joining us, Zach Bale. We appreciate your time. And for more information on the event, visit tourdebruta.org. It's time once again for our weekly daily calendar rundown. We're sitting here with Esther Maronio. How are you doing, Esther?
Great. How are you, JP?
I am more stoked. Is that still a word?
Yeah.
Stoked on this calendar than ever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's May.
me is in addition to the beginning of summer, pretty much, it is also National Bike Month, just in case anybody didn't know that.
Of course I knew that.
Well, I know you did.
I didn't know that, actually. Oh. Thank you for thinking I did. Go bikes.
Yay, go bikes.
It's also when May Day is going to take place, the May Day rally, that is. That's at the Salt Lake City and County Building. It's a worldwide event. It's for workers to take back the streets, basically, and protest along with the Occupy Wall Street people.
Nice.
It's branching out of that.
Are you going to be there?
No, I got to work.
Oh, yeah.
I got to work, so.
Me too.
And Wednesday, May 2nd, another exciting event, the 4th Annual Utah Beat Society at the Hotel. / Club Elevate.
Yeah, yeah.
DJ Juggy's annual event where different beat makers in town get together and they have a beat off. What?
Can you describe to me what a beat off is all about?
Actually, you know what? Now it sounds a little. This is a family show, Esther. Of course, it's a family show. There's soccer moms with tattoos taking their kids to soccer and shit. And they're listening, and I apologize that I just said beat off.
Don't apologize for that.
And shit. It's not fuck. That's ruined. And Thursday, May 11th, your favorite event to help us out with.
Happy birthday, Elliot Sechrist. He's one of our writers. He's also in the band God's Revolver.
Yeah, he is. He's a metal rocker. He's also in some Laughter. I think he was in Laughter as well and played a few events of ours. So happy birthday, Elliot. Thank you for that, Esther. Mm-hmm. And also on that date, Spork, Uncle Scam, The Wild Ones, all at Burt's.
Ooh, we actually have a slug rider who's an Uncle Scam.
Oh yeah.
It should be. What's Spork all about?
Spork is Bill Frost of City Weekly fame's band.
Really?
And they're really good.
Huh.
You didn't know he played music.
No,
he keeps
kind of
it
music
low key,
it?
But it's just old school, good old fashioned rock and roll.
Nice.
I said old twice and I didn't mean it. Bill is a spry mid-30s guy, I bet. He's living it up. And Friday, May 4th, another fun event for you.
I'm so excited because the May issue of Slug is out on stands. Yeah, and you can pick it up any place cool. And this month is actually our beer issue, so you can look forward to a slew of beer-oriented content.
I'm really excited about that. It's one of my favorite issues of the year.
I know. I think it's a lot of people's favorite issue of the year, and it was a lot of fun to put together, so make sure you check it out.
And Saturday, May 5th, the day after that, it's the Live Green SLC Festival. That's at Library Square. It's local beer, food, and bands. It's also the launch point of Tour de Bruta. We just discussed that, actually. So listen to that part of the show for more information regarding that, or you can check it out on our website, slugmag.com. We have more info there. And on that same day of Mice and Men at Capitol Theater, which is a Utah opera presentation.
Yep, of John Steinbeck's novel of Mice and Men. And there's an after party at Café Molise.
Have you ever been there?
I haven't. What kind of food is there?
I'm guessing French, because it's got an accent on the E.
I think that's how you pronounce cafe, just generally.
Allegedly. The good point is there. Right again. I always have to be right about things. Which is good, because we're a factual organization.
We are very factual, which is... I actually have another fact for you, JP.
What's that?
It's about our iPhone app.
Please tell me more.
Well, if you have an iPhone, you can look up the Slug app and download it, and within you will find not only all of our magazine content, but also the latest podcast episode, along with a link to call us directly at our voicemail line and give us any feedback that, you know, you might have about the show or the magazine or whatever.
Those are a lot of facts.
That is.
Maybe too many.
Too many.
So what I recommend doing is, if you're at home and you've gotten lost, and you didn't have all that stuff written down, just rewind. That's the beauty of the podcast, isn't it?
I don't know that I'd call it rewind, really.
Okay, what would the kids call it, Esther?
Click on your streaming, I don't know what it's called.
It's called rewind.
Okay, rewind. Be kind, rewind.
Wow, that's even older school now. What I was talking about. Some blockbuster video shit. Thanks as usual, Esther. And for more daily calendar info, you can check out the last back two pages of the magazine. You usually find our calendar, and you can also check the front page of the website at slugmag.com.
Yep.
Have a great day, Esther.
You too.
You know what? Have a great week. Despite Despair is a hardcore band from Provo, Utah. They formed in 2009, taking their name from a Parallax song in tribute to that band. Last year, they released their debut EP, Victims and Vultures.
This month, the band teamed up with Gunner to release a 6-track split album. Off that split album with Gunner, here's Undeserving. From the split EP with Gunner, Unyoke, that was Despite Despair's Undeserving. To find out more about the band and pick up their albums, visit them online at facebook.com/despitedespair. Or for more info on Gunner, check them out at thisisgunner.com. Free Comic Book Day is a yearly event to help promote reading and youth through comic books. It's held on the first Saturday of May, and participating stores across the country hand out free issues of major titles specifically made for this particular event. Many stores will also hold special sales, contests, and extra events to further encourage people to read and buy more comics. Slug's office coordinator, podcast producer, and comic book fan Gavin Sheehan recently sat down with Greg Gage from Black Cat Comics and Sugar House to talk about his shop and the event. Canvas. A clock without a craft. Kind of Dr.
Manhattan. Detect the past, present future, then bleach out the fantastic. How did you get into comics?
Boy, I actually got comics when I was 4 years old. My parents brought a stack home. They went on vacation and brought a stack of comics home, and I started reading through them, and that was it. I thought they were the coolest damn things in the world. Kept reading them, got as many as I possibly could, and here we are.
Favorite titles growing up?
I think some of the first books I ever read, X-Men, Avengers, which is good for right now, and Batman, some Superman stuff, just kind of the standard superhero, you know, early 70s superhero stuff.
Like coming off the golden era, going into silver age?
Yeah, yeah. You know, they were, gotcha, I don't know if I should say this or not, they're 20 cents, 25 cents when I started buying them. But, you know, it was pretty much, yeah, coming off the golden age stuff, and they were kind of getting a resurgence. Was when they brought X-Men back, and it was an exciting time. It was some cool stuff.
What made you want to start up a shop, and how'd you formally form Black Cat?
The answer I guess I'm supposed to give is I wanted to, you know, give customers a choice and take care of customers and provide a good selection and things like that. The honest to God answer is I just wanted more shit for myself, and that's the only way I could think of affording it. I just kind of wanted to, you know, honestly, to give, you know, give a different choice, you know, for people that wanted to go get comics, because there's a lot of, you know, there's plenty of shops that have comics, but there's really no shops that only do comics, and that's all I was really interested in doing, is only comics. So, you know, as far as getting it together, I started with a really meager, somewhat pathetic bunch of back issues that I bought at the DI. I had about four or five long boxes full of back issues when I opened the store. Not a whole lot of stock, but it, you know, gradually built. And it was surprising how many people immediately came in and started saying, hey, do you buy comic books? And I always knew I wanted a big back stock, you know, for back issues, because it's not a lot of people really specialize in that. It's really hard to do. And they just came to me. And after that, it was kind of easy to build an inventory.
How is it for you starting up and to this day still kind of be referred to as the younger shop compared to the others like Night Flight and Dr. Volts, where they've been around for years?
I think that label's kind of starting to wear off because we're coming up on 8 years now. So, you know, we have been around for a while. I still don't mind being referred to as that. I don't care. As long as people are coming in and I get to do what I want, you know, for a living, that's, and be my own boss and be a professional geek. You can call me whatever shop you want, I don't care. There was a little bit to prove, I guess, when I first, you know, came on the geek scene, I suppose. You know, a lot of people would come in and say, well, really neat shop. It's tough to have a comic shop. Too bad you won't be around next year. You know, they would honestly say that to me. And, you know, I'd just say, okay, well, thanks for coming in. See you next year. You know. But yeah, I think a lot of that I have moved past, because there have been a lot of, you know, smaller shops that have popped up here and there, you know, since. Most of them have not lasted, unfortunately. I say unfortunately, because I happen to think competition is a good thing. You know, I don't mind being still referred to it. I probably always will, because, you know, I'll always be a little younger than the other guys. So, even though I'm technically older than the other guys, but that's okay. Anyway.
What is your relationship like with the other shops in the Valley?
Yeah, I can say, for the most part, I've got to choose my words carefully, for the most part, really good. You know, I think a good example of, you know, last night we did the Avengers X-Men release party, and we kind of did that with Dr. Volts. You know, we were the Avengers, they were the X-Men. We had kind of an informal, kind of fun competition, you know, and people were going to their store to get the X-Men stuff and to my store to get the Avengers stuff, and it was a lot of fun. You know, like I said, I mean, for the most part, I have a really great relationship with the other stores, and I think it's really because we all specialize in different things. You know, there really isn't a reason to not have a good relationship with other stores. You know, Haster Hobbies has a huge game section. You know, a lot of people ask me how I feel about game night being so close, and it doesn't even matter because they don't do comics. It's just kind of a geek community, and it's good to, you know, I think, embrace the whole thing. Enthusiasm back, capture a tone, word of mouth, and it happened. Living a conic adventure, time of a century, in the heart of dreams, enchantment of a memory. Systematic by nature, rock steady, my pedigree. Brick for brick, a foundation, a legacy. In and of itself, universal allegiance. For those not familiar with it, what is Free Comic Book Day? Free Comic Book Day is a very special national holiday in the geek world. It's kind of geek prom. the first Saturday of every May, pretty much all the publishers, all the major ones certainly, and a lot of the smaller publishers will publish a specific book to be given away on Free Comic Day. There's usually signings, you know, at local stores. This year we're having Ryan Otley, who's the penciler, of course, for Invincible. and Derek Hunter, who does Pirate Club and is now working for Cartoon Network doing Adventure Time.
He also did Derek Hunter.
Derek Hunter is a fuck. Yes, yeah. Yes, he did. and they're gonna be here just hanging out, signing autographs, and you know, doing quick sketches and you know whatever they want to do. It's a lot of fun. It's mainly just kind of a big, you know, again, a big geek party. You know, we don't have any stipulations. You know, oh, you can get two books. You know, I mean, if you come in and you see, honestly, if you see 20 books from Free Comic Day that look cool to you, grab it. Take them, have fun, go read them. A common misconception is the free comics are free to us, which they're not. I don't know if everybody out there knows, I'm sure they don't, that comic book stores actually buy these. We pay, it's not much, but we pay anywhere from like 10 to 30 cents a piece for the books. You know, it's basically an advertising loss, but it's completely okay because somebody's gonna read something and think, hey, this is cool as hell, and they're probably gonna come back and buy more. You know, and getting more people into comics as a whole is a great thing, and I think anybody that doesn't participate in this is out of their minds. but you know, it is. It's a lot of fun. It's just come and get free stuff. We'll have free coffee from Badass Coffee. They usually sponsor a lot of stuff, either that or Dolce and Sugar House. So it's, you know, it's fun. It's a big community thing, really. We just try and get the word out as much as we possibly can. You know, on the website, on all the social network stuff, flyers. We'll put flyers up with different businesses. You know, like I said, Badass Coffee will be there, so they're going to have some flyers. You know, just kind of different businesses supporting each other in the community and just trying to get the word out, essentially.
What stuff have you got planned for Black Cat for the rest of this year?
Well, we've actually got a lot of stuff going on. There's the big back issue sale at the end of April. Last weekend of April, we're taking 50% off all the back issues, and we're going to try something this time and take 50% off the graphic novels too, and see if I can't possibly caffeinate myself up enough to get through that day. That's kind of a lot of fun. People, you know, line up and look forward to that, and it's, you know, you come and get good deals, and it's just it's again a lot of fun. In June, the second weekend of June, we're celebrating our 8th anniversary, and Sina Grace, who is the penciler for Little Depressed Boy from Image, and Stribble, who is the writer for that, they'll both be at the store signing. They'll have some original artwork from the book to give away, and Sina's also the smart-ass guy in the back of Walking Dead. He's the editor for all Robert Kirkman's books. But, you know, there's tons of stuff to give away. It's just, we're just going to try and make it as fun a year as we possibly can. You know, this last year has been great, and it progressively gets really more busy, which means more fun.
Free Comic Book Day is taking place this Saturday, May 5th, at stores around the Valley and state. To find a store near you and read more on the event, check out freecomicbookday.com. For more information on Black Cat Comics, visit them at blackcat-comics.com or visit them in person at 2261 Highland Drive, Suite A in Sugar House. It's right across the street from the Cinemark Theater there. You can't miss it. Play School was an electronic and industrial music venue founded in late 1992 in downtown Salt Lake City. The venue was formerly located under the old 6th South Viaduct and featured many local and national DJs that came through town. Prominent names include Crash Worship, Marky Clark, Donald Gloud, DJ Dan, DJ Taylor, and various other performance artists. The venue was closed down in 1995, though, due to issues with the city after only 3 years of performing. This year marks the 20th anniversary, and former owner Chris Sick is going to be throwing the event at Five Monkeys to honor it. Slug's editor Angela H. Brown recently spoke with Sick about Play School.
So Chris, I was hoping we could start off with you explaining to the listeners what Mechanized was and the time that it was around. What year did Mechanized officially open?
Well, Mechanized also opened in 1992, just earlier in the year, and it was kind of a central hub for the electronic music scene as it was just beginning to sprout in Salt Lake City. There really wasn't much going on except for the early parties by Taste and by a company called Deep, which later went on to run and open Play School. But Mechanized was really kind of the central hub where we sold clothing, we sold, you know, scene apparel, and we sold music, anything we could think of really that augmented the look and feel and sound of the scene in the early 90s.
And, you know, I've got to say, it breaks my heart. It was the original location of Mechanized was just up the street from where we are now at the Slug headquarters. And every time that I drive or walk by that vacant lot, it kind of bums me out a little bit. it because that building was so cool. It was kind of an old garage, right?
Yeah, it was actually a warehouse garage type place. People, anarchists really, lived in the back. And the front, they had built a little, kind of a store frontage, but it's really generous to call it a storefront. It was more like a cubbyhole that was stuck to the front of their building.
And what was that exact address, just for people that still live in Salt Lake as they're driving around?
Well, it was on 3rd South between 2nd West and West Temple.
Kind of across from where P.F. Chang's is now, and at that time there was also a really cool coffee shop called Bandaloops was across the street.
Yeah, I remember Bandaloops. Bandaloops was quite the hot spot of its day. In fact, that's how Mechanized first got started. I went door-to-door predominantly through the coffee shop selling T-shirts that were industrial-looking and electronic ray-traced and computer animation graphics on T-shirts, and sold them to the customers at Bandaloops. Until we had enough money to order more shirt, and then had enough to eventually open the store.
That's cool. So it was almost kind of a way for test marketing whether or not the business concept for Mechanized is going
to
work.
Yeah, it was definitely, that's a good way to put it.
And not only apparel, but you also sold records.
Yeah, the record started as, I've DJed since I was 16 and I'm 42 now. So I started in 1986 DJing mostly new wave and things like that. But quickly by the early 90s, like 90, 91, I had found and introduced to acid house and hip house and new beat, a lot of the things that transformed into techno. And when we opened the store, I was ordering records for myself and selling whatever surplus was to a very, very small market. But very quickly, the market increased kind of in a couple leaps. Some phases of DJs exploded onto the scene, and then we started ordering more records specifically for them, duplicates of a lot of mine that they had heard, and then also we started ordering just new releases every week.
And at the time, there were some pretty prominent Salt Lake DJs that kind of came out of the Mechanized scene. Could you maybe kind of talk about who they are and some of their national appeal?
Yeah, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I think I probably traveled the most out of any of the Mechanized DJs, partially because I was the earliest. I had the first foot in the water, as it were. DJ Daisy also did very well. She was the other core DJ that was the actual play school resident along with me. There was the two of us, traveled pretty extensively. She did mostly California. She moved to California. And I did a total of 37 states and Canada and Mexico.
That's so awesome. I'd like to talk about the connection between Mechanized and Play School. And Play School was a really cool underground venue. Can you maybe first off talk a little bit about Play School, how it started, where it was located?
Yeah, it was kind of hidden away underneath a viaduct that has now been torn down in a building that is now an office complex. It was an open warehouse on about 600 South and 300 West.
Now, wasn't it, there were rumors that it was originally a candy factory. Is that true?
I think it was. It went through a lot of different stages. It had an upstairs kind of living quarters, and then downstairs it had the big main area and several smaller kind of chill rooms.
And it was primarily known for, I mean, its association with the electronic scene, although there were bands that played there. I remember seeing a band called Far play there.
Oh, yeah.
I remember seeing Crash Worship play there, which was a legendary
times.
Show.
Yeah. Several times Crash Worship, I mean, even blew up a car outside once with bottle rockets, caught it on fire on accident. There were a lot of things that went on there in addition to the dance music. A lot of performance art, actually. Some of it a bit risque, and other of it just really intelligent.
And what were the years that Play School was open?
Well, Play School had two phases. The first phase was the original Play School, which was 92 through, I believe, 94. And then 94 and 95, he had a second, the owner of Play School, Greg Bishop, had a second venue, which was a small warehouse where Gateway is now, actually.
And then how long did that incarnation last?
Oh, about 8 months, 6 to 8 months. It was not very long, but a lot of people remember it because the scene had exploded. exploded, and a lot more people were looking for something underground, and it was still the only place that was open after hours.
Now, when Play School, you know, when both incarnations eventually did die and kind of end, how did that affect the electronic music scene locally?
Well, Mechanized kind of took over the lead and still kept a calendar of events to help promoters actually orchestrate times to do their shows so there wasn't overlap. So there was, the biggest problem was that there was no longer a venue that went after 2 a.m. Play School had found a loophole in the law in which you can only dance in organized events or grouped events till 2 a.m. in the morning in the county of Salt Lake. The problem with that law is kind of a footloose sort of thing, but they had found a loophole in that that law did not apply to schools and churches. So they got a license as a school of dance.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and they actually hired a pretty big lawyer and fought the city for more than 2 years over it and had basically won, but kind of let it all fall apart.
We're celebrating Play School with the lunch and then also the evening show, correct?
Yes, yes. Both happen on May 12th. The luncheon is at Oasis Cafe during the day at 2 p.m. And it's kind of a meet and greet for everybody, especially the out-of-staters who haven't seen everybody in, gosh, years and years. I haven't seen some of the people since Play School, so I haven't seen some of them since 1993, I'd bet.
And if they want to go to the lunch, they need to RSVP?
Yeah, there's an RSVP. Either you can pick up tickets for that at Borough Syndicate, which is at 5180 South Commerce Drive, number R.
And then tell us about the actual evening. Who's going to be performing? Who's going to be playing?
Oh, my goodness. It's kind of off the charts. Most of the main DJs from the Play School era have decided to get tickets and fly from their hometowns to their expatriated town. We've got in the main room, we've got a VJ named Lexus from St. George, who will do video mixing of classics from the early 90s. Then after him is DJ Nebula, who plays Deeper House. Bobby Reno, who's flying in from Seattle. DJ Daisy, who I spoke about earlier, she's flying in from Los Angeles. And then myself, and I DJ under the name DJ Mechanized, or Chris Sick, but back in the day I was still considered, just referred to as Mechanized. And then the second room has DJ Dopey, who's a local kind of funk superstar. There is Superfly, DJ Superfly. He plays funky electro breaks from the early 90s. And then Stymie. And last is a guest DJ from San Diego, who was very instrumental in the scene. He's actually bought his own ticket to come out and play for the party. His name is Mixoplex.
The 20th anniversary of Play School will happen Saturday, May 12th at Five Monkeys, which is at 7 East, 4800 South. The event is featuring 9 DJs as well as visuals and light shows. For more info, visit fivemonkeysbar.com. That's a 5 as in the numeral 5, monkeysbar.com. Thanks for listening to another episode of Sound Waves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. What are some of your favorite brew pubs around the state? Do you happen to have a special pub in your heart that you like to have a drink or dinner at? Send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it's available there. Just drop us a line. We may just play you on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and it's produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art design by T. Doan and technical design by Kate O'Connor. Got another really good episode next week. Napalm Flesh is going to be joining us in the studio. We'll do a roundtable on our favorite metal albums. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.